And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 14 of The Roundtable. I'm here with my baseball friends, Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Gentlemen, how was your 4th of July? Were there any fireworks, any festivities that you'd like to share?
Well, I was in the Bay Area for like 48 hours. And in that time, listened to some KNBR. And boy, those Giants fans are mad.
They are. We will get to this. KNBR is, if you don't follow LOL KNBR on Twitter, he's a delightful follow for the Giants partisan because he listens to a lot of KNBR. And boy, they do get mad. They get a little frustrated when the Giants are playing like this. Andy, how was your day?
My 4th was fine. I watched the fireworks on the East River from a friend's place in Brooklyn. It was very nice. But that guy from LOL KNBR, he got very mad at me for a column I wrote last year, and it was basically just about how wonderful the 2021 Giants were. Like, I just love, like, that was just, what a lovely team. Like, but I pointed out that if you complained about the Wilmer Flores thing, you're a loser. He didn't care for that. Yeah, because like Wilmer Flores, if he's given another chance, like, definitely is getting a hit off Max Scherzer in that spot for sure.
He would have. It would have gone over the fence. Come on, man.
His expected batting average was like -100. In that's
I like those odds, baby. I've watched Hunter Pence hit a ball 3 times to score a championship winning double. All right, we're just gonna hop right in because we got a lot to talk about. When we're gonna talk about the wild card, the teams scrambling for it, the value of the wild card, the extra 7th or 8th wild card, I don't even know at this point, at the trade deadline. Andy, you have thoughts, so I'm gonna turn it over to you. Talk about the wild card and how it's going to affect the deadline as you perceive it.
Thank you, Grant. Yes. I have been sick, and so I appreciate you pointing that out, that I'm playing hurt today and once again carrying the show. I think that this deadline is going to be really interesting because they added a playoff spot this season, right? I am against playoff expansion. I think a lot of people, like baseball fans, are kind of against it. Obviously, the owners and the commissioner are for it. They want to put it as many teams in the postseason as they can. And so it's kind of an unstoppable train, basically. I think it's going to be bad for the sport. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how a variety of teams navigate this deadline. And we're going to kind of start to see what the value of that, like, 7th playoff spot is. Or what is it? 6th? 7th? I don't even know anymore. 6th, right? So it will be interesting to see how teams like the Cardinals, the Phillies, the Giants, the Rays, the Guardians, maybe even, like, Seattle, who it's kind of unclear if they're still in it. But we're going to kind of see, like, what the value is. And I think that the way certain teams pursue that spot is going to reveal something about, like, their organizational sort of mindset, also their, like, sort of where they are in their winning timeline, per se, and the level of, like, desperation. So I think, like, what you'll see maybe the Rays do as compared to the Phillies may be very different. But I think it's more interesting, like, maybe, like, what do the Giants do? You know, what, like, What does Seattle do? Like, do you push in and try and really go for that last spot? Or do you, you know, just basically kind of roll the dice with the group you have? And we're going to see, like, what an actual value is, because that's the only really races there are, maybe like the, you know, the Central and the East, the American League Central and the National League East. There's division races, but those teams are probably going to make it. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's fascinating in a lot of respects, but I think like a team like the Giants had their offseason maybe formulated around the idea that, hey, the postseason's expanded, and it's not just expanded, but there's not just this one do or die game. It's much easier to get into the real playoffs compared to where it was last year. And what is the value of winning a division now? It is fine, I guess, to get a first round bye, but we have no experience with first round byes in baseball necessarily. Is it good? Baseball seems to be one of those sports where you'd like to have a little bit of a rhythm, a little bit of a touch going on. And what happens with that first round bye and you come into a team that's hot and they've just won a series and now you've had a week off? Is that good? I don't know. Sounds good. Maybe you're rested, your catcher's healthier. It sounds like it should work, but that's interesting. And we have no data on it. And so how are teams going to value winning the division? I think the Giants said, no, I think this is good. I don't think we need to spend money now. They're regretting that maybe in a little different way, but I don't know. It's a fascinating idea.
I also wonder, with that leeway, how many teams will be compelled to try to do a little bit of both? I think that's what's fascinating, is that it used to be a really binary thing. You're a buyer, you're a seller. This setup feels like you can kind of do both, and you might lean one way, but being able to do both, when you think about it, you can really improve your team a lot if you take away some of these constraints of one or the other and you kind of do a little bit of both. You know, and especially when you talk about some of those teams right there, Andy, like that are in that mix, these are teams that aren't afraid to try stuff like that, Tampa Bay in particular. So I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out. You know, how the game, how the industry reacts when, you know, somebody wades into this territory and it's clear that they're doing both. Because I feel like that opens up a whole host of possibilities that maybe we wouldn't have seen before. You know, maybe there are players that end up getting moved that we don't see coming, which happens every year. But like seeing that in this context where you have a team that might be making moves that's perceived as a little bit of both, selling and buying, adds a little bit of chaos to it, potentially. And, you know, kind of spurs on some creativity, too.
Well, especially given there's just not many great players expected to be moved this deadline, you know? Like, there's not a Max Scherzer, there's not a Trey Turner. I mean, you look at who are the guys on the block right now. It's Luis Castillo, it's Josh Bell, it's Andrew Benintendi. It should be Frankie Montas, depending on how his, you know, arm is feeling. Could be like Nelson Cruz, but it's just, you know, these are like decent additions. There's not a number one starter in there. And so, you know, I don't think Tampa Bay would be willing to move the sort of player who can really, you know, like could fill that void. You know, I don't think they're not going to trade like whatever Wander Franco or something like that. But like you can get more value for a G-Man Choi type or whatever, just based on the scarcity, you know. It depends on where the franchise is. Like, I think making the playoffs for the Phillies has way more value, even if it's in that sixth spot, from a franchise standpoint, than it does for the Rays. You know, I think the Rays have a machine going that even if this is a bit of a blip, and even if the division, they kind of have to punt on it because the Yankees are so good, they know that they will stay competitive based on the farm system they have. Like, the Phillies are not in that position, you know, so they sort of have to, like, go for this, because otherwise, like, what is the point? Like, they're spending so much money already, you know?
Would Seattle fit there too, given how long it's been for them? Wouldn't the Mariners be in that same boat?
Yeah, it would. So a team who's willing to maybe, you know, sell while still contending, you know, you could pick off like extra value from a team like Seattle, from a team like Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, and I would think Philadelphia is a fascinating case because, yes, the expectations are high. They spent, I don't know, $250 million or whatever this offseason. But also, they have that thing that every team wants heading into the postseason, which is at least two starting pitchers who are really good, you know, really, really, really good. And if you're facing the Phillies in a short series and you've got to deal with Nola and Wheeler pitching as well as they're capable, that's big. And if you could add a third starter to that, if you could add some bullpen help, if you can add this and that, I get that we've had our fun with the Phillies being lovable galoots and being out there, and Bryce Harper's injury changes some things. But if they can go into October with Bryce Harper entrenched at the DH, with their lovable galoots hitting, and with a starting rotation, you have to look at that and say, yeah, that would give us a chance. That would give us a chance. That's not wacky. And with that extra wild card, that little extra chance for them to get in, I would think, yeah, they're not giving up right now.
In the spirit of taking it easy on the Phillies, you mentioned Zach Wheeler. Name a better free agent pitching signing in the last 5 years. What he signed for Rich and Hill. What the performance has been innings-wise. You know, so yes, we have been having some fun treating the Phillies like a pinata, but looks like they got that one right.
Mark, you're the Wheeler whisperer. What is the difference between him in Philadelphia and him with the Mets?
I think he stayed healthy, first of all, right? He's gotten older. I think what you're seeing is somebody, it's really simple, an accumulation of time put in and just learning yourself a little bit better. You know, the Phillies made that deal because they bet, like a lot of teams did, on the fact that this dude throws hard and misses bats, which is always a pretty solid bet, right? But like in the context of when that deal was signed, you could make the argument that that wasn't, you know, the obvious mode of thinking yet, right? There was still a tinge of, look at this guy, like really hasn't done it, like, you know, a lot of hype and you've seen flashes. That had been his reputation. But I think, you know, a combination of just the dude knows himself a little bit better, but he's always had this stuff. What he's doing there isn't something we haven't seen before. What we hadn't seen before is a consistency, and I think that is just somebody becoming a more well-rounded, more experienced major leaguer. And by the way, when you look at Wheeler's injury history, right? He missed all that time with Tommy John. There was a tendon issue in there as well. It really delayed some of his development at the major league level early in his career. So I think we're seeing some of that catch up, so to speak. So always had the swing and miss stuff, but yeah, you're just watching a more experienced person.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm fascinated with the teams that have something in place that translates to a deep postseason run. Because you've seen teams that have one or two good starters ride those starters all the way through the postseason. You've seen teams that have just an amazing bullpen ride that bullpen all the way through. I mean, we talk about, have we ever mentioned the 2015 Royals on this show? I'm not sure if we have, but like a bullpen like that. So if a team has one of those things in place, like last year, my team before Devin Williams broke his hand was the Brewers. Because it's like, man, how do you beat the Brewers? They're going to get you into that sixth inning. And if they have the lead, that's going to be just game over, man, game over. And it didn't work out like that, but I'm fascinated with those teams that have that. The Phillies have it with their starters. I'm trying to think of other teams that might have it. The Rays have it with their bullpen. I don't know. It's just once you get into that short season, that's the value of that extra wild card because, hey, it's baseball. Anything can happen.
You know, you can also argue, like, I don't know, maybe this is like junk science, but like I've heard a couple execs put it this way. They're like, if getting those first two seeds, that's like 50% more valuable, right? Because you don't have to go through the 3-game coin flip. Essentially. So like that adds, you know, what, however, I don't know. That's, I don't know how math works. It's almost, you know, you just getting to that first or second seed is huge. So I don't know if it will incentivize, you know, the teams at the top end, like the Yankees are going to add, the Mets are going to add, the Dodgers are going to add, you know, I don't know if that really is related to getting that extra seed. That's just what they do. But like, it does put more weight on that, I think.
I do wonder what happens when a few years down the line, and this is to Andy's point, right? The Phillies clearly have a reason to push in. The Seattle Mariners, obvious reasons to push in. It's been forever in the postseason for those two clubs. But after a while, if this, you know, as this setup goes on, there can be a lot of teams that, you know, their postseason drought just isn't as long, right? And then I kind of wonder, how does that change the equation as far as some of the urgency? Because I, you know, that is some, you know, the old school trade deadline, that's some of the fun stuff, right? Is when teams are super urgent and they're making illogical decisions. But of course, that's just not how the folks who run clubs see the world anymore. I'm interested to see like how this looks down the road. I think now, right, we do see some intriguing possibilities because of some of the history that Andy's talked about there. But I think that might change a little bit, especially because this whole thing is designed to end these playoff droughts, right? It's designed to make sure that the Baltimore Orioles of the world, you know, finally get back there after this, like, you know, long, you know, walk through the wilderness. So that's what I'd be curious to see, like, okay, what does this feel like now? How are teams actually behaving?
Grant, I'm going to ask you a question that might upset you.
Oh, please.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll titillate you. I don't know. Should the Giants sell?
That doesn't upset me. Let me tell you why. I've watched the Giants for the last week, and they're playing some of the worst baseball I've seen them play. That end of sentence. Like, I don't need a qualify for that. And I'm talking about the Giants of, you know, 2018, 2017. They were bad, bad teams. And I'm not saying this team is anywhere close to that bad. They're playing like that now. When we made fun of the Phillies defense, the Giants have that defense now. They are just nincompoops out there in the field, like just straight up nincompoops. And it's hard to watch, and they're not hitting. I would say, yes, it's tempting. They wouldn't have the most obvious pieces to sell.
I kind of strongly disagree on that, but keep going.
I mean, well, okay. Well, I haven't really thought about it, so let me think. Rodon would be pretty darn valuable to sell. That is a good point. I'm thinking more of the more expensive position players, but they're not doing anything that anyone would want. They could really blow it up. I'll tell you, if they don't play watchable baseball over the next couple of weeks, it's possible.
If you're a good baseball team, and this is not to slight Josh Bell. I think Josh Bell's a really good player. He's, you know, like, but if you're a good baseball team, would you rather have Josh Belt or Brandon Belt? I don't know. Like, Belt's obviously had a much better track record. You know, Bell is obviously playing much better this year. But, like, I don't know. I'd probably rather have Belt just because he's been in those sort of situations before. He's played meaningful games, which Josh Bell, having played for the Pirates and the Nationals, never really has. You know, obviously, Jock Peterson is a battle-tested veteran, you know, who would fit any club. With Rodon, does his options change if he gets dealt?
I don't think so. I think it's mostly just a straight up once he gets to 120 innings or something.
Yeah,
he's got a player option that turns into it. But
even that, like, would you rather have Rodon or what? You know, what is Frankie Montas right now? There's a void to be filled of good players on this market, and the Giants are one of those teams who could fill that void.
It makes sense. And listen, you can't put, they're a forward thinking office. They're going to be realistic about all this. They have what I think I was talking about earlier, where, like, hey, if we get in there and we've got Webb and Rodon, we've got a chance. If we can add X, Y, and Z, if we can shore this up, if we can get this guy going, I still think that they like the bones because it's the team that they thought was going to defend the NL West title. They put this team together on purpose, not because they were trying to be austere necessarily, but because they thought, hey, this gave them the best chance to win. They still must have some idea that, no, this can work. We just got to do these five things and it'll be perfect. So I still think that there's going to be some confidence in the front office to try and run it back. But wow, is it not working right now?
This sounds like the sports leader right now. Yeah. You know, Bob from Walnut Creek having the ass about the Giants. Let's walk it through, right? Let's say that this is the option they go with. Because I agree with Andy. There's some players on here that I think, you know, other clubs would see and, you know, affix some value to. Fair to say, though, that they could still get this so that they're competitive next year, even if they started shedding some pieces, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see a club where if they did that, they've set their timeline back at all. Like, I feel like they just spend some money, make some targeted ads, and you know, here we go again. I don't know. What do you think, Grant?
Listen, that's right. I mean, I don't know necessarily what their plans are because they're going to have to probably replace Rodon. I don't think they're going to want to pay him what he's going to get in the open market. I think it might be time for, I think it Brandon Belt, the happy marriage might not work out because he accepted the qualifying offer. He's going to want maybe a longer term deal. That might not be in the Giants' plans. So there are going to be already some of these players we've talked about. Maybe they're already planning to move on without them. They've had a good luck in the past finding one-year deals, two-year deals for fix-em pitchers like Kevin Gausman, Alex Cobb. His ERA is high, but he's been pitching great. They have an eye for fixing the team and improving the team. I don't know, man. I think it is definitely plausible. Listen, it's going to be, what do we have, 3 weeks until the deadline, 4 weeks until the deadline. There's going to be a lot of baseball between now and then. And even if the Giants are moping in to the deadline and they're right around where they are now, which is a couple games over 500, they're a give a penny, take a penny team. I think that it's definitely on the table. I don't know how much they would value squeaking into that last wild card spot.
Yeah, but it's like to what? To get the chance to maybe host one game? I don't even know how the format works. They change. I genuinely don't know. How does the format work? Is it 2-1-1 or 2-1? Who cares?
Yeah, I think it's good. Maybe it's 1-1-1.
No, we need to get too many off days. We need to get a national baseball writer on this call. Right. Look, I'm sorry. I got to be honest. I knew the rules. Like, I used to read the CBA, and then like around like 2020, they just started changing them all the time. I don't know. The trade deadline's in August. Maybe they can move it up to July 31st. Who knows? I'm looking at the Giants roster though, and like the two guys who, if they moved, would it feels like would significantly affect their contending timeline are Logan Webb and Mike Yastrzemski. And everyone else, it's kind of like, you know, they're doing short-term agreements. So, like, you know, if you're Farhan Zaidi, like, you kind of need to – you're not going to win the division. The Dodgers' hegemony, despite what some idiot wrote last year, has not ended. The, you know, the Dads continue their bizarre, you know, sort of – really good season, you know, and they have a much better, they have a better farm system, right? And they have locked in, you know, they've got Machado, they've got Tatis, you know, they've got all these, you know, guys coming through, they've got all this pitching. You're not winning in this year. You need to continually re-flourish or replenish, you know, the system. Like, you should be looking for, I'm not saying, you know, you should punt, but like, I would be really curious to see, based on the dearth of other good players on the market, what sort of opportunities there are here.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
What you have with the Giants is that they have proven a couple things that they can do well. They can identify talent. They can make players better, whether it's players that they inherited from the previous regime or players that they've spotted on the open market or on the trade market. They can take them. They can make them better. That's going to help. What they have not done yet is polish their own prospects. Come from with, other than Logan Webb, they haven't really brought up that guy, Elliot Ramos, Joey Bart. They have not folded him in like a Walker Buehler or Gavin Lux. So what they might want to do is just get more raffle tickets. So if they are around 500 and they are, you know, they're just kind of limping into the deadline, they might want to just spend some of that capital that they have and get more raffle tickets because they have not proven that they can have that self-sustaining machine.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I don't know. like I said, I think there's just some opportunities. Is there anyone, I mean, is there any other team? Like, what does Cleveland do? Does the playoffs mean more to Cleveland than it would normally? Like, you know, based on their actions, you'd kind of think no, right? They're a team, even when they were, like, crushing the Central, were still willing to, like, shed payroll. But they haven't been crushing the Central for a few years. They've sort of created a path to having a new owner. This fellow, I believe his name is David Blitzer, is, like, the new minority owner. He's going to replace the Dolans. You know, like, there is a void there that maybe, you know, that's a team that has a robust farm system and has a lot of confidence in their ability to regenerate prospects. Like, they could be fairly aggressive, you know, this deadline in a way that would maybe surprise some folks. I don't know.
I have a hard time offering the benefit of the doubt to an ownership group that has pretty much behaved one way, no matter what's going on the field, right? Like, I mean, I don't want to, like, make a generalization there, but, like, when I think about the clubs that just, you know, are going to operate under a very, very set, you know, strict guidelines, the Cleveland Guardians are it. Like, they're right in that group of, this is how we do things. It's always how we're going to do things. And over there, that means, you know, not doing something that will require you to spend money at some point. And if you're dealing prospects, right, at some point, that will translate into you having to pay some guys. And I don't know. It's hard to see that just because that's how they've operated. Maybe, you know, when the new ownership group comes in, maybe you see something different there, right? There's always that honeymoon period when someone takes over a club where they do some things. You know, barring that, I don't know, man. It's kind of hard for me to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I could see them trying to split that hair and get someone who is a little bit cheaper under contract for longer, maybe pay more of a prospect premium, someone like a Brian Reynolds. I mean, we know that the Indians have not had a very good outfield for like 15 years now. It just feels like they've really been struggling since with their outfield. Yeah, man. And so, like, I don't even know if the Pirates would entertain a trade for Brian Reynolds. But I think someone like that, where you're saying, listen, we're adding, we're also not committing to spending in the near future. We've got this guy for a couple of years. Yes, we gave up some of your favorite young prospects that you wanted to hug tight. But at the same time, we're going to keep going. And we're not all in this year, but we're in for the next couple of years. I think that could be a good fit for the Guardians.
Yeah, and you'd think that Reynolds is priced to move, right? Because didn't they come to some cost control with him before the season began? I feel like they bought out his last couple of arbitration years. And so when a club does that, you would think that, hey, that is somebody you can move and that becomes really, really attractive, obviously. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it was 2 years. I can't remember the number, but, you know, the fact that it was locked in, when it happened, I'm like, okay, that's like putting a little red tag on the dude right there, right?
He's 2 for 13.5, yeah. And then he's not a free agent for several years after
price
that.
To move.
Do you know Brian Reynolds and Adam Frazier started the All-Star game last year?
Well, yeah, Brian Reynolds is freaking good. Brian Reynolds,
he's fine.
MVP candidate last year.
What?
At one point.
Yeah. He seems fine. I don't know. Look, have I seen him play ever? I attended the All-Star game, and I'm not sure I watched him play. I don't know. That does feel low. That feels more like a Clevelandian move because he's not super expensive and it'll probably just cost prospects and, you know, but they got a lot of dudes. But I don't know.
And I could see the Rays trading someone who's under contract that would, wow, I can't believe they traded this guy, but they've got some sort of 17 dimension backgammon game going. And I could see a team like that, maybe not specifically the Rays, but a team who has a player that we're not thinking of right now, who's under contract for a couple of years, maybe a Mike Yastrzemski, like you said, or maybe, I'm not sure, maybe someone on the Tigers who is part of the team that was supposed to be half decent this year, but not. That there might be these guys out there who aren't the Luis Castillos, the obvious ones, and that's going to be really interesting at the deadline.
Sean Murphy of the A's, right?
Sean Murphy,
I mean, that's one of those dudes I think of, like with a lot of control, Gold Glover last year, he's above average offensive player at that position, lots of control, and that team's going to stink for a long, long time. So, yeah, I think they're going to stink for a while.
It could be, I don't know.
I think we're looking at like Oakland Mausoleum, late 70s, early 80s, dreck.
You're just thinking that because you're reading Howard Bryant's Ricky Henderson book.
Which, by the way, if you're not, you should, folks.
Yeah, it's great.
It is a great book.
Wait to read that.
But, like, that's what that A's team looks like to me now. Like, whenever I put him on, they're just god awful. They're god awful. And I think it's going to be that way for a while, but you know, that's just me.
And again, good for me, because it's just, I'm telling you, there's so much room in the parking lot. You cut up the canopy. You're playing baseball. You're not worried about it. I'm throwing softballs to the girls. I'm not worried about hitting cars, man. It is great. The one thing I was worried about with the extra wild card was that you would have a team that squeaks in that, man, just does not deserve to be a postseason team, that you look at and go, what are we doing here? As the current standings sit now, you would have the Cardinals and the Rays as the last wild card teams. I want to watch those teams. Like, I would watch a postseason series with one of them on purpose. Is that just a fluke? Are we going to get one of those teams? Because I'll tell you, the Orioles are 6.5 out. So a good strong couple of weeks from the Orioles and we get them up there. But right now, as it stands, it seems like that cutoff isn't as gross as I thought it would be.
No, I think you're right. I do think that will probably be the mode most years. Like, most years there will be pretty competent teams. When there's an incompetent sixth seed, it will be very glaring. I mean, this was this happened in the old system, right? You know, the 06 Cardinals, the 2000 Yankees won 88 games or something like that, right? Or 87. I think issue with the wild card is that, yeah, in that three-game series, you're going to see two good teams, right? Like, you're going to, the sixth seed is going to be pretty good. I just think it would be better if that sixth seed was trying like hell to get to be one of the four seeds or the five seeds. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather get a month of the Cardinals, like, you know, having desperately to run down the Brewers, you know, if they're back 2.5 games or something like that, rather than just like, you know, knowing kind of like, hey, we'll be all right. Like, we just got to hold off the Phillies, like, as long as, you know, they still are, you know, don't have gloves or whatever is going on down there, you know, we'll be okay. So that's all. I'd rather see all that, you know, the potential satisfaction of a decently played, competent three-game like series in October. I would rather just see more meaningful games in September.
I'm with you. I don't like it. I thought that there would be more completely, come on, man, I don't want to watch these guys in the series. And it's not like that now. So maybe that cutoff works in that. But I agree. You don't get that game 162. What was that? 2011, where it was just bananas. You're not going to get, that in a very muted way. It's going to have to do with postseason seeding and home field advantage and stuff like that, which isn't as exciting.
Maybe you see it this deadline, right? Like, you know, the fear is that expanding the playoffs causes teams to race towards the middle, right? Rather than race towards the bottom. And so maybe you will see, like, Tampa Bay does nothing. St. Louis does nothing. Cleveland does nothing. You know, all these clubs, like, don't add because, hey, like, what's the value? You know, we're going to find out. Like, we're going to, like, this is the first test case of, like, how teams really do value that spot.
How valuable do you think a first round bye is? I mentioned it in passing, but I have no idea how to value. The seeding is good because you're saying you're getting out of that one coin flip series, and I do appreciate that value. But as far as a baseball team, a first round bye, does that excite anybody?
Right, that's the age old question you get to the postseason, right? Is like these days off that you don't have during the regular season that you're having to deal with. Like, for me, like, if you're gonna win a World Series, you're gonna have to figure out how to deal with that anyway. So if you're dealing with it in the middle of a CS or, you know, right before the playoffs begin, like, sort of doesn't matter. You're gonna have to deal with that if you're trying to win a World Series anyhow. I don't know if it makes that much of a material difference, you know, like, and you can go through all the scenarios and, like, there's always a good and a bad to it, right? Like, if you're a team that had to push hard to get that seat, yeah, like, you probably have leaned on your bullpen awfully hard. And so whatever those days are between, like, I mean, if you're a bullpen guy that has been run into the ground for 2 months because you've been in the heat of a chase for seeding, I think that you'd probably want that time off. Now, that said, you hear hitters talk about it all the time. Rhythm's important. Time off is brutal. And here you are having to do it right at the right out of the gate. But again, if you're going to win the World Series, you have to deal with that anyway at some point. So, and if you're a good team, there's always that chance that you make a quick series, like 4 or 5 game series, and here we are again. You've got a break. So, I would think, given just how important bullpens are, right, and like lining up pitching and all that, that it ends up being a net positive from that standpoint, like if you have that break, totally understand it if you hear the hitters complain that, ah, oh, this sucks. I get it, but I still think kind of a net positive from the pitching side.
It'll be interesting to see like if we get into like late August and September and the Dodgers, because this isn't going to happen in the AL. There's two great teams in the AL. There's the Yankees and there's the Astros, and then there's a bunch of decent teams. But in the NL, there's the Dodgers, the Mets, the Braves, and the Dads. And it'll be interesting to see how hard they push to leapfrog into that bye, right? Like, is it worth it to gas out your bullpen trying to get a few days off to get through that three-game series? Or you just say, look, we're in the playoffs. Let's just roll. You know, like, let's not go crazy here. I don't know. We don't know. So, like, these are, like, as much as I dislike the general concept of the expanded playoffs, they do create new sort of interesting scenarios, I guess. Like, it does create, like, sort of, you know, just questions like this. So I think that will be something worth watching as the, you know, as the summer goes on.
You know, kind of as you were saying that, what I also like about this, because it is something that hasn't had to be considered before, is that maybe this is a thing where there's a variance as far as how teams approach it. Because I think there's a lot of decisions now where, by and large, this is what you expect, right? Like, I think teams have, like, you know, seen the value, let's say, of, you know, like the a platoon matchup or whatever. Like, I think we've all seen the line change work, so to speak, where you're, you know, like the Giants, obviously, last year. But, you know, when you encounter something like this that has never been a thing before, I'm kind of intrigued by the fact, or at least I'm hoping, that you got a bunch of smart people that come down differently on it. You know, that it's not one blanket thing, that there are debates going on and that we see some differences in how that is handled, which I think is always great. I think that adds to sort of the unpredictability of things. I'm all for that if that's how it plays out.
And one thing worth pointing out, I don't think these teams know. They don't know. Like, they know more than us. Maybe less than Grant, but like, they know more. They have more information than us, and they can look at the various metrics on, like, you know, what relief usage will do, and, you know, if you push guys into the red zone, how much will that affect it? But, like, this is – they don't know. That's kind of interesting, right?
And they're also going to know, right, because if we're talking about rest, and, like, they're going to know who's banged up and who's going to need that time. I think that's a lot of this calculation, too, is, like, okay, which of the guys – that are sort of the cogs to your lineup or in your bullpen or in the rotation, how banged up are they? How much of a priority is it? You know, like, if you get those days rest, does somebody's capacity to perform increase significantly? And we're not going to know that from the outside. Those are the only ones that will know that too. So I think that's another major variable in this that makes it interesting and could lead to some decisions that you can't predict, because it's going to be completely dependent on, hey, does this really important piece of ours, like, how much of the priority is the time off for them?
It's junk science, right? Like, I mean, I assume there, maybe, I don't know, who knows what, how well the computers work now, but, like, if you're looking at, like, you know, World Series championship expectancy, right, versus, like, risk with bullpens, because that's the obvious one, is, like, how hard do we ride these guys? How much does getting the one seed increase, you know, the bar on the right, and how much does it decrease the one on the left, and how does decreasing the one on the left affect the bar on the right? You know, this is obviously an audio medium, but just assume that I'm presenting you all, the listener, with a sort of visual cue that makes sense. I'm raising my right hand, and then I'm raising my left hand, and my right hand drops, and now, so who can say?
The production values are just super high right now.
I will say the biggest change for me, or the biggest point of edification that I had when I moved from being an unwashed blogger to an unwashed writer with access, is the idea when I was a blogger and you had a manager make a pitching changes. Oh, come on. You're bringing in Jones when you had Johnson. Come on, man. You know that Johnson's got the better blah, blah, blah. And when you have access and you're talking, it's like, well, Jones had a little bit of a hot elbow, and I put him in for five out of the last seven games. And you're not thinking five out of seven. You're just looking why he didn't pitch yesterday and stuff like that. And how much goes into a good manager's bullpen decisions and how much they're thinking about it. They're conversing with it 100 times more than you've thought about it. And that is what's going to go into these decisions. So when you have a team like the Rays, who is very, very bullpen dependent, when you have a team like that, maybe the Brewers, I mean, they have a good starting core, but they're also going to be a little bullpen dependent. Maybe that's going to factor into, boy, if we can get past that, get our bullpen a little bit of rest, we can start get to that series. And now we have Devin Williams coming in the sixth, seventh inning, and you have Hader, and that is going to be impossible after Burns and Woodruff. Maybe that is the calculation there.
Well, you're not going to have Hader for multiple innings, but yes. Yeah. You might have him on 3 days in a row, though.
Look, you've named run prevention clubs, that, you know, teams that are predicated on just squeezing the other guys. And so I think that style of game is a little bit nerve-wracking anyway, given how much you're leaning on these arms. And you know, I think it's really fascinating that when we talk about like the way bullpens are used, what they've done is essentially take out a lot of that, not a lot, take out some of the unpredictable nature of the bullpen. Because I'm old enough to remember when it was like the bullpen gate would open and the feeling was, oh, you never know what you're going to get. And like now, you know, because of matchups and like just a better understanding of what guys stuff, how that matches up with who they're going to face, like, you know, creating lanes for guys, managing workloads, understanding, by the way, that each of those people might be a little bit different, right? Someone might be able to bounce back faster than the other. That's a lot of bandwidth, a lot of calculations. And so you would think that those teams that are styled that way, that extra time off would be of even more value, which, again, at least I hope that's how it works, because I want to see different types of decisions. I think that's fun.
I love the framing of I'm old enough to remember, because A, it was like 4 years ago when we felt like that. And B, teams like the Phillies, buddy, they are still
I was just going to say,
dude, I don't know.
Put on any Phillies game and like, ooh, what, yeah. Anything could happen.
That's true.
There are teams still living by the seat of their pants with their bullpen.
I mean, you should watch Craig Kimbrell closing in L.A. Like, there's crazy stuff happening out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you think that trade surprised the heck out of me? I don't know if we have to relitigate that trade. Like, I get that they didn't need Adam Eaton maybe as much as other teams might have. H.J. Pollock. Wow, that was a deep cut. You know, and Pollock's not doing great shakes with the White Sox, but at the same time, like, I don't know, that trade surprised the heck out of me.
It was more like the way the Dodgers framed it is they wanted to clear at-bats for like Chris Taylor and Gavin Lux and make it. And so they just kind of had a salary swap, you know, essentially. And like they needed someone to pitch the ninth inning because Blake Treinen is not a closer. He prefers to, you know, like, you know, set up or whatever. He prefers like the seventh or eighth and like the sort of the fireman situation. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a problem in LA because they've had a closer, you know, issue for several of the last few years. They really didn't have one last year because Kenley Jansen was kind of back, but like they had this problem in 19, they sort of had this problem in 20, you know, and in 19 they couldn't figure it out. In 20 they just threw Julio Urias at the situation. Now, like, Julio Urias, like, well, I don't know, maybe he doesn't start game two anymore. You know, maybe game two is Tony Gonsolin. I will be interested to see. I bet you, I would assume that Urias, closer to free agency, is less interested in, you know, being the fungible sort of guy he was several years ago. So I don't know if you can just throw him at the problem. But the Dodgers, you know, given like what their lack of holes on the roster, like that's the one thing that you could definitely upgrade, but who are you going to do it with? Like David Robertson? You know, okay, sure, like maybe it's 2013 again, you know, and like he's still able to do all that stuff, but it's an interesting time.
So what I'm getting from this podcast is that the Dodgers are going to trade for Camilo Duvall.
And I mean,
obviously.
Well, okay, like if you're Farhan Zaidi, pick up the phone. Yeah. Say, make me a fair offer for Camilo Duvall and see what it is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I am not a fan anymore. I am here for the content. And by gum, that sounds like good content. I'm here for the takes. I'm here for the subscriptions.
Boy, that would really light up the sports leader.
The sports leader.
Now, I will say, when you said I'm not a fan anymore, I immediately thought, wow, what is Camilo Duvall's walk rate that has upset Grant so much?
Nah, he's good. He is. He's a very fun pitcher to watch. But just in general, I don't know. All these questions are fascinating. We didn't get to talk about the Astros, so we're gonna have to do that next time, because we were gonna talk about the Astros being what's the word you used, Andy? Good.
Yeah, they're good. They're good. They're very good. They might be the best team in the AL. I don't know. The Yankees are the best team in the AL, but they're really good. They're really, really good.
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
Come on, man. The Yankees.
Yankees are good. I don't know. I do. I don't know. We'll get to this next week. All right.
The Astros. Good club.
Astros are, they're a good baseball team. All right. We will be back next week. We will probably talk about the Astros, unless they lose like 5 of 6 or something, because we talked about them here as a preview.
Lord
probably
knows. Not. The Angels will do something this week that'll make us talk about them.
Yeah. Isn't Phil back? Isn't Nevin back next week? Maybe. So there's always that. And then I'm sure we can get Lowe on the phone or something. I mean,
as an industry, we should boycott the Angels until they play better. The media industry.
6.5 back of the wild card. They got a shot.
Sam Blum dropped the toxic positivity on him this weekend. So that's always fun. We've reached that point of the program.
Oh, my gosh. All right. This has been episode 14 of the Roundtable. We will be back next week. We will talk baseball stuff and hope you will be there to listen. I will work on the outro between now and then, maybe. But thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.